Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, world. Welcome once again to Tuesday Talk with Key West Lou. I am your host, Louis Patrone. Well, it has been one hell of an exciting week, a dangerous week. It looks like the world could be on the edge of the cliff, and if someone moves the wrong way or falls off, we could be into some sort of war. This is the first time I have had this feeling in 30 or 40 years. I know we've been in Iraq. I know we've been in Afghanistan. But I never had this feeling. We initiated those things, I felt. When we went in because we wanted to go in. Not that we started these wars, except for Iraq. But this is something different. This is a third party out there pushing the whole world into conflict. And I want to talk about it tonight. And I'm going to talk about it, but I'm not going to talk about it the way you hear it on TV or the way you hear it, you read it in the newspapers or the way the media carries it or the way the president talks about it or the way Secretary of State Kerry talks about it. All this is beyond me in that regard. That they are the statesmen. They are going to save us all, supposedly. What I wish to discuss with you tonight, what I wish to share with you, are the things that I picked up that I wasn't aware of or I didn't think of, and you may not be aware of or have thought about them. So a lot of the show is going to be about Ukraine, but don't go away. Stay with me because I guarantee you will find it interesting. Let's start this way. As far as I'm concerned, we are looking at another Munich, and we are looking at appeasement. And here's the way it plays out. Putin goes into Crimea. That's part of the Ukraine. He just walks in. One sovereign nation does not do that to another. You just don't walk into somebody's country and say, we're here, we're taking over. Even though shots really haven't been fired yet, the Russian army is in Crimea. Now, this reminds me of Hitler. Let's go back to 1938, and Hitler wanted union of Austria with Germany. He says, hey, the Austrian people, really, they all speak German. They're my people. They're our people. They should be a part of Germany. And the people in Austria wanted to be a part of Germany, as it turned out. Anyhow, he marched into Austria. He marched in. He wasn't invited. And the next day, okay, based on the enthusiasm of the Austrian people in welcoming him, Hitler formally annexed Austria as part of Germany. Let's move on now to another item which occurred thereafter in 1938, and I refer to the Sudetenland. The Sudetenland was a part of Czechoslovakia, the western part of Czechoslovakia. It was a small piece of Czechoslovakia. It was heavily populated, though, by German-speaking people, about 3 million German-speaking people. And Hitler came up with the same argument. These are German-speaking people. These are our people, my people, and they belong as a part of the German nation. Now, he's prepared to invade. I mean, he brings his troops up to the borderline and all that sort of thing. France and Britain, you know, they thought, well, we're going to put a stop to this. And they enter an agreement immediately with Czechoslovakia that they will defend Czechoslovakia, France and Great Britain, in the event anyone invades them. This doesn't bother Hitler for one primary reason. He knew that France and Great Britain were not prepared to wage war. They didn't have enough of a military. They didn't have an updated military. They didn't have a qualified Navy. They didn't have an Air Force, okay? And he said, up yours, I'm going in. Well, now they had a meeting in Munich. Do you remember Chamberlain, Prime Minister of Great Britain? He flew over to Munich and sat down with Hitler, and they agreed. Great Britain, France, and Chamberlain was leading this mockery. They agreed to give Hitler the Sudetenland. Just like that, they took it away from Czechoslovakia. I don't even think they had the right to do it. And they say, you can have it as long as you promise you won't invade any other country or wage war. And Hitler put this all in writing, too. You recall Chamberlain getting off the plane in England and flashing the piece of paper saying, peace in our time, which was a crock because World War II started soon thereafter. And what Lewis is saying to you, that the situation in Crimea and the Ukraine has the probability of starting a war. There is going to be another Munich. I see it coming. Tomorrow, in Brussels, NATO and the Russians, Putin, are meeting. Under the agreements we've entered into over the years, NATO has the legal obligation to defend Ukraine if they are invaded as they have been. So there's a meeting between NATO and Putin tomorrow in Brussels, and I am fearful that this meeting in Brussels or soon thereafter will result in another Munich. And I'm going to tell you this. If you give in to a thug once, he's going to push you again because he knows he can get away with it. And then he's going to do it again. And at some point, you've got to stand up and fight back because the only way you beat a bully is by knocking him on his ass. And nobody's knocked Putin on his ass so far. And really, the only country that can do it is us. And I think Obama backed off on Syria. He should have done something, even if he went over and bombed a few airfields. Because he said he was going to do something. When he did not, this emboldened Putin, and that's why we have what we have today. Okay, let's go on to something else. They have in the Ukraine, and I don't know if you're aware of this, they have a neo-Nazi party. Isn't that amazing? We have a Nazi party in Greece that I'm telling you, if there's the next election in Greece, the Nazi party in Greece is either going to come in first or a strong second. They're going to be a powerhouse in the government. They may take over the government. Excuse me. Well, there's a neo-Nazi party, too, in Ukraine. And let me tell you about them a little bit. And let me tell you about the United States' involvement with them. And you're not going to believe what I am going to share with you on this. This is striking. The neo-Nazis, they're called the right sector, by the way. Everybody that's a part of is in the right, whether it's our government or their government, they're called the right sector. They wear yellow armbands with a swastika on them. They wear fatigues. Their faces are covered with black masks, most of them. Now, you've seen on television that the Russians normally wear, or the Russians wear these half-black masks. This neo-Nazi party, they wear a total black mask with only the eyes showing and a slit for the mouth. Some carry guns, most baseball bats, and they wear the brown shirts, of course. Now, they're pretty popular with our people in this country. You heard what I'm saying. The neo-Nazi party in the Ukraine is very tight with our people. There's an assistant United States Secretary of State by the name of Victoria Nuland. She is the key person in the relationship with the good guys. You know, you have the Russians, and then you have these new guys, these new political groups that have gotten together that want to take over the government, transform the government. And the neo-Nazi party is a significant part of this new group, the good guys. The Nazis are part of the good guys. And do you know that we have given more than $5 billion already to Ukraine? And some of that money has gone to the neo-Nazi party, a significant amount, because they're part of the good guys that we are backing. We are backing the neo-Nazis. I don't know how this all plays in. And it isn't that we're backing the neo-Nazis that bother me, the neo-Nazi party. You have to do what you have to do sometimes. What bothers me is this. Have you read about it in the paper? Have you heard about it on television? Have you seen it in a magazine? Absolutely not. I picked this information up off European newspapers, okay? And the European TV media, the British broadcasting channel. But you haven't seen it here in the United States. I have a sense, and there is a sense out there, that there's an agreement between the United States government and the media, okay, the Western media, to not get into this neo-Nazi thing and to not even speak the term neo-Nazi. It is taboo to use it in the press or on television. You haven't seen it yet in the New York Times. You haven't seen it in the Washington Post. The journalists, I am, from what I've gathered, are being told not to use the term neo-Nazi. All right, so now we have a transitional government going. In this transitional government that's being formed to take over, let me put it this way. The neo-Nazi party has, it's been agreed, and they presently are doing this, they are responsible for two very important portions of the government. They have significant positions, like in the cabinet, okay, which gives them, now this is going to blow you up, de facto control of, guess what they control? They're controlling it now, and they will definitely control it if this government is formed that the United States is backing, which probably will take over. But the neo-Nazi party controls the armed forces, the police, the national security operation, the intelligence operation, and to a significant extent, the courts, because the chief prosecutor that's been appointed as part of this transitional government is a neo-Nazi. All right. Now, staying with this, this bothers me, though, and it's going to bother you, unless you're anti-Semitic. The neo-Nazi party takes this position. They're open about it. They want to purge. They want to get rid of the followers of President Yanukovych. I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name properly. They want to purge all communists, all Russians, and all members of the Jewish community. They say this openly. They want to purge all members of the German community. Now, we, in recent times, our people in Washington have had their picture taken with Ola Treisbach. And who is Ola Treisbach? He is the head of the Nazi party in Ukraine. And he had his picture taken. Remember I mentioned Assistant Secretary of State Victoria Nuland? Her picture ran all over the European newspapers. You didn't see it, her with the head of the German party, the Nazi party in the Ukraine. And the man we all admire, and we do admire him, but I think he's too crazy. He's always saying America stands with you, whoever you are. Now he's saying America stands with the Ukraine. He always wants to put boots on the ground to help somebody. Senator John McCain recently had his picture taken, and it was in all the European newspapers with the head of the Ukraine neo-Nazi party. This bothers me. Because we've put money into these people, and we're supporting them, and they've got a bad apple in the basket with them. But the thing that bothers me, and I've said it before and I say it again right now, is the fact that we are not being permitted to know. They haven't opened the books to us in this country. Our government, our media, have not told us that the neo-Nazi party is a significant part of the new government, that the United States is supporting it, that the United States has given $5 billion, more than $5 billion, to the new transitional government, of which the neo-Nazi party is a part of, and that the new transitional government contains two people who have responsible positions in that government, and they're all being supported by us, the United States. Why can't our country, our president, our people tell us what's going on? And why does the media, this is the second time, I forget what I nailed them on last week, where they don't share things with us. All of a sudden, we do not have a right to know. Now, staying with Ukraine. Chuck Hagel, 2 weeks ago, said, we have to downsize the military. We got to start saving money. We're no longer in a war in Iraq. Afghanistan is winding down. Good luck. And he wants to cut the military by 13%. I did a number on that issue on this show last week. I said, it's no time to cut the military. Russia's not our friend anymore, and we're having trouble with them. This is before the Ukraine really came into play. The Ukraine popped up since my show last Tuesday, all right? China is on the verge, maybe, is going to go to war with Japan. You don't know. China, in the last 5 years, has built up their naval force, their ships, their carriers, so they will control the Pacific. At the same time that we haven't built a new major ship in the United States, and they want to cut the military, what are we going to do if China and Japan go to war? And we have an obligation to help Japan. There's too much turmoil. Africa's up in the air. There's countries all over the world that are in trouble. And at some point we seem to get involved or we will be involved. I believe what Reagan said, you have a strong military. Because let me tell you something, if you have a strong military, no one's going to screw around with you. Also, I do believe what John McCain said in this regard, whenever you have a war, a battle of any kind, you can't just do it with airplanes and with big artillery pieces. You have to have boots on the ground, men on the ground. So that's what we need. We need to keep our army the way it is and make it bigger. And the proof of the pudding is Ukraine, which occurred this week. It bothers me that in Washington, our leaders don't see this, do not understand, whether it's President Obama, because Hagel's part of his administration. They didn't realize that another country was going to say, screw you, I'm going to do what I want, like Russia's doing. They did not suspect that Russia might do something someplace like this. So this is a crock. People aren't paying attention to the right things. I'm beginning to wonder how smart, how intelligent the president administration is. And I'm sorry to say that because I supported Obama twice. Now let's go to Secretary of State Kerry. I'm just an old man, 78 years old. I've been through how many presidents? I don't even know the number. But I can remember Harry Truman, okay? I was a kid. I was in the eighth grade when he ran in 1948, the first time I saw him face to face. But I've been through all these presidents, and being a student of history all the time, I'm aware of what has gone on in this regard. Our Secretary of State, our diplomats normally don't go on television and say, Putin's a bad guy, and we're going to do this to him, and we're going to do that to him. Diplomacy is normally conducted quietly behind closed doors. The arguments take place face-to-face behind closed doors. How can you go on television, like for a half hour today, and say what a crud Putin is in effect, and then sit down with him in Brussels tomorrow and try to make peace? It doesn't work that way. I have felt this way since Kerry became Secretary of State. He's using this as a platform, not to run for president, but he's posturing himself. He loves being in that position. He loves speaking tough. Well, tough talk isn't necessarily what's going to solve our problems when it comes to world wars and conflicts. So I think he has been wrong, and he should tone down. The president should tell him to tone down. This administration's beginning to worry me. I say it again. Now let me share with you some things I've learned about why Russia may not do anything really. This is a major bluff on the part of Putin. He throws his soldiers in, but nobody shot anybody yet. Do you follow me? And now he's going to sit down. He said on TV today something to the effect, I really don't see this as a problem. He's going to sit in Brussels tomorrow. Why? It has to do with oil and gas. Recognize that Russia's income, 75% of Russia's income, big number, 75%, is based on its oil and gas exports. I received an email from a friend of mine in Italy yesterday. She said, there cannot be a war in the Ukraine because then we won't get our gas. Italy's gas supply comes primarily from Russia. Her concern was, and she's an elderly woman, how am I going to cook? That's a basic don't laugh. But it's like not having toilet paper in Venezuela. On a more substantive level, Merkel, Prime Minister of Germany, she said yesterday, she's been talking a tough game, by the way, up until yesterday, and after she said this, or 2 days ago, her tough mouth stopped. She closed it. She said 60% of our gas comes from Russia. 60% of our gas comes from Russia. These people, like Germany, big, powerful Germany, lots of money Germany, great industrialized nation, they don't want to go to war. They've got to cover their asses and keep that gas coming. Okay, so this has to be taken into consideration, how it influences our partners who are supposed to be playing with us 100% in whatever's going on over there in the Ukraine. Still staying with Ukraine, I want to talk about their army. I want to talk about the Russian army. I want to talk about certain oil and gas situations involving Russia, a little more on that. Russia's army is in lousy shape. I don't know why we don't know this here. They don't talk about it in the paper. Will somebody let us know what's going on? Russia's army is in bad shape. All right? And it's not necessary today to buy your oil and gas from Russia. Other areas have, other fields have been opened in other nations in Africa and Europe that can supply the oil and gas. Some are supplying it to a minimal degree. They may not be up to snuff 100%, but within a short time, 1 to 2 years, no one's going to need Russia, okay? Just like we don't need Saudi Arabia after 2015 for any more gasoline or oil. Now, the Ukraine supposedly, they're ill-equipped to take back, to take Crimea from the Ukraine. And here's why. This is the truth. This is the truth. Russia's ability to project power and hold territory is not good. Their ability to project the appearance of power and hold territory is not good, specifically the Russian army. 80% of those drafted in Russia evade the draft. You hear me? What kind of an army can they have if only 20% of those drafted show up to be sworn in? The army itself in the last 20 years has grown smaller and smaller each year. The Russian army has fighting commitments right now in the Caucasus and far East Siberia. They, you know, like when we were with Iraq and Afghanistan, my God, if we had another war, where are we going to get the soldiers from? We don't have enough people. That's where Russia is today. They're in the Caucasus. They're in the far east portion of Siberia. They ain't got enough troops to maintain another war. Nobody shares all this information back and forth. Also, the troops they have on the ground, those soldiers have been seeing on television, they're only in the army for 12 months. Then they go home. 12 months is all they're in for. Okay. Now, this is wonderful, isn't it? Let's see what else here. Just a second here. Oh, don't disregard the Ukrainians. You know, they look like schmucks on TV. It's the only way I could put it tonight. I saw them. They marched. They remind me of the French at the beginning of World War II trying to oppose the Germans. They marched in their sharp uniforms and went up to the Russian line, yelled back and forth for 5 hours. They didn't have any guns either, by the way, the Ukrainians. And then they turned around and marched back. It makes it look like they ain't got what it takes to beat the Russians, and maybe they don't. But I want to tell you what they're doing already. There are many Ukrainians that speak excellent Russian, okay? They have been infiltrating Russia in the past week. They are crossing the borders. They're in Russia. And if something happens, they are prepared to sabotage bridges and infrastructures. And Putin, from what I can gather, knows this. Okay. Wild, isn't it? The only friends in the Ukraine that Russia have are the Crimeans because they're Russian. And they want to be a part of Russia. It seems that way. That's what bothers me, that we're going to give that part of the Ukraine tomorrow or in the next few weeks to Russia because they have the balls to walk in with their army and say, I want it. And we're going to try to buy Putin off. This is like the Sudetenland, Czechoslovakia, Hitler, Munich before World War II. Now let's talk about equipment in the Russian army. Equipment's very important. Look at how our boys did. when they were in Afghanistan and perhaps Iraq, and our vehicles did not have enough metal around them to prevent the bombs that were going off in the road from coming through the metal and hurting these guys. We did not have proper equipment. We didn't have sufficient equipment. Our boys and girls were taking metal sheets and tying them around their trucks and everything else and their armored vehicles. Okay? The word is that the armored units of Russia and the air assault helicopters, helicopters are a big thing in wars today, are not up to snuff. The Russians haven't kept up, just like we haven't kept up with our military forces, especially the Navy. The Russians haven't. They weren't going to have a war anymore. Their armored units and their air helicopters, their fuel consumption is off the it's just off the records. Too high to sustain a war, and their equipment is old and breaks down rapidly. Okay, so that's the story there. Now, staying with time is running out here. I'm never going to get past the Ukraine tonight, I'll tell you. The last point on the Ukraine is the banks. This is very interesting because banks are whores. They've been whores for 30 years. They've gotten to be bigger and bigger whores, and no one can argue the point with me except for a banker. What has happened in the Ukraine this past week when Russia walked in? Well, the big bank, there the big banks control the little banks. The big banks got together and said, no one can withdraw from their savings account or checking account through the ATM machine or anything else more than $100 a day. So if you got $10,000 in the bank, you can only take out $100 a day. And they said this was being done because they were worried and they were concerned that whoever took out more money than that, probably large amounts, I don't know what, we're going to use that cash for sabotage against the Ukraine. I don't buy it at all. I think the Ukrainian banks are just as rotten as the American banks and the English banks, and they see an opportunity to make a play, to control the dollars, hold on to them longer, make more money with them. They're also afraid, of course, there would be a run on the banks. And why not? Your country's going to war. Get your money. Get the hell out of it. Put it in a tin can and bury it in the backyard. That's the story. That's the story as I see it on the Ukraine. It's the little things. Much of what I have shared with you tonight, I doubt you were aware of. I wasn't. And I think these things are interesting, and we should know. And we don't know, and that's what bugs the hell out of me. We are not being told as a public in the United States where we're supposed to know everything. Everything's an open book. What really is going on? Well, good show so far. I'm going to talk about Syracuse basketball. Normally I talk about it at the beginning of the show, but I wanted to be certain I get the Ukraine in. We've lost three of the last four games we played. We've dropped from number one to number seven in the national rankings. We're playing Georgia Tech right now. The game is concluded, but it wasn't on national TV. Once we weren't in first place anymore, we don't even get on any national TV or regional TV station. It's amazing, isn't it? They don't want us. Just like that, we're dropped. A better-looking woman came along. That's all it is. So that's what's happening there. My book's out there. People are buying it. I know. I want you to buy it and read it. I want the whole world to read it. The World Upside Down by Louis Petrone, Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. Well, I hope you had a pleasant week. I don't like how I feel in the pit of my stomach about this Ukrainian situation. I've got to assume that most of you feel the same way. It makes us all uncomfortable. I hope nothing bad comes of it. I'm not impressed with our leaders in this situation thus far. And that's how Lewis feels. What can I tell you? Thank you for joining me. I'll be back here next week to speak with you again.